Tonight on The Download, Chicago pastry chef Mindy Siegel, host of the interview show Mark Fazer, and comedians Adam Burke and Blake Burkhart play The Worst. And now, here's your host, a man who forgot to watch the Oscars last night, Justin Kaufman.
I knew there was something. I was like sitting there watching reruns of the Goldbergs. What was it? What was the internet talking about all night that I wasn't paying attention to? Even Twitter was so obnoxious. I actually didn't want to watch the Oscars. I made a decision. We talked about it on Friday that I didn't want to watch. But all social media, even like CNN, everything that you're like, maybe they'll just talk about Trump tonight. For once, right? Instead, no, it was just Oscar. Who cares? I know, I get it. It's pop culture sensation that everybody wants to be involved in it. People love the movies and they want to see great work, recognized. But come on. Anyway, I watched the first part of it, Chris Rock, and then I skipped the middle part to watch Baskets. I had to catch up on Baskets, which if you're not watching that show, I'm sorry, but this time, I guess Emmys, Louis Anderson's going to be up there going, I just want to thank all my people over at Ari Emanuel Endeavor. I want to thank my team for getting me here. He's so good. If you're not watching that show, Baskets, Zach Galifianakis, it's so great because you realize when you watch it that Zach Galifianakis is a true talent, and he's such a talent, and he could play anywhere, and he's done it, whether it be on the movies with The Hangover or Bored to Death, which was on HBO, so good as a supporting role. To be in a moment where Zach Galifianakis is not only playing himself but playing his twin brother. And really being the star of a show on television, that's a huge treat. So kudos to FX and kudos to everyone to give Zach Galifianakis a place in which Zach Galifianakis can shine. It's that show, Baskets. It's so good. Anyway, I watched that instead of the Oscars. Welcome to The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman here on WGN Radio with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got a thrilling show lined up for you. I really like the mix of guests tonight. Different topics, different people. First, we look ahead to Super Tuesday, but not with a conversation about poll numbers or politicians, but more about what drives us to be ambitious. You hear it all the time. I mean, why would anyone want this job to be president? Is it the power? Is it the prestige? What role does ambition play when it comes to chasing the highest job in the land? We'll talk with our resident philosopher, Al Genie, professor of business ethics at Loyola University, coming up later this hour. My guest tonight at the big table is Chicago pastry chef and restaurateur Mindy Siegel. Siegel is not only the owner of Hot Chocolate in Wicker Park, but she's known as a mentor to pretty much every pastry chef that's come through Chicago. Siegel sits down with me to talk about her next move, pot brownies, but more about what her life looks like, about slowing down, about taking stock of what's important to her. I can't wait. Mindy Siegel tonight, 8 o'clock. Also tonight, our good buddy Mark Bazer's here to talk about this week's interview show at the Hideout. We'll also talk about the Oscars last night. Which I skipped most of, as I said. But luckily, the internet won't let me skip anything anymore. Like this morning, I woke up and I looked at everything. And it was just like, it was like the Oscars all over again. You need to watch this. Look at this. Nonstop. Like, you can't even, like, Twitter put a little thing up. Instagram put a little thing up. Facebook put a little thing up saying, click here for the Oscars. Like, blocking my normal feeds so I can click Oscars as if that's the only thing going. I don't know. I don't know why I get so mad. The diversity of media options right now in our country, in our world, in the place we live. Yet we homogenize back to one thing that everybody has to watch. And it's just like the Super Bowl. Just like the idea that social media is going to be like Super Bowl, Denver, Carolina. Look, click. They did the same with the Oscars last night. It's obnoxious. Not one thread for Baskets. Anyway, we'll talk with Mark Bazer coming up here. We'll talk about the Oscar issue of diversity. Also continue on a thread from this weekend when I filled in for Amy Guth. Talk about the alarming rate of artists and comedians leaving Chicago for the coasts. We'll talk with Mark about that because he's had to go with that through that in his lifetime. Also, live music tonight in our WGN Showcase studio. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club will be here to play some music and talk about how they're approaching the release of their latest work. They're changing up the model. I like this. And it's Monday, so it's time for the worst. You know what's the worst, breakfast DJs. Have you been to a brunch place lately? Now there's DJs. Why do you go to brunch? You go to brunch to catch up with friends and talk. The last thing I need is a Cypress Hill remix louder than I can hear. You know, it's the worst, breakfast DJs. I'll say it. I know it's probably opening up a world of opportunity for DJs. But if someone goes, yeah, we'd like you to DJ our breakfast, say no. No need. Anyway. we're going to play the worst with some of the best comics in Chicago. Adam Burke is here, along with Blake Burkhart. Very exciting. Two great comedians. But it's your game, and we got tickets to give away. We're going to give away tickets to Poi Dog Pondering. You down? All you got to do is come up with what you think is the worst. 312-981-7200. Last week, I believe her name was Sarah. She won for the worst are guys at the gym with the huge bottles of water. It's true. That's the worst. So we'll continue. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. And, of course, production provided by my man Pete Zimmerman. It's The Download. I'm Justin Kaufman. The Download, of course, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right. Let's get to the carryout. Let's start the night, the segment we do every single night. It's where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The Chicago Public Schools laid off 80-plus employees and teachers in an effort to shave another $100 million from the budget. City leaders attack Springfield for letting this happen, once again pleading for lawmakers to come up with a new funding formula, in which lawmakers in Springfield responded, hey, come on, it's February. We don't do anything till the end of May. What do you think we do down here? We eat lunch. That's what we do. And we got an extra day in February, so there's a lot of lunch today. Leave us alone. The Chicago Teachers Union said we could be looking at a strike on April 1st, which to me is terrible timing, because I would just think it's one big April Fool's joke. Oh, teachers didn't show up. Maybe they're in the closet. April Fool's! I guess they're on strike. Super Tuesday tomorrow, but today Mayor Emanuel weighed in on Donald Trump. The mayor belittled Trump for being a reality show star and then condemned him for not disavowing David Duke more than he did and for tweeting out a Mussolini quote. Okay. Trump then responded with, wait, Rahm Emanuel, I give you money, like, all the time, right? Because that's American politics. Also, are we really at the point where we're having a conversation about the KKK? The other stuff didn't stick to Trump, so we're just bringing back the classics? KKK, even white supremacists are like, KKK? Oh, God, they suck. The Zika virus has arrived in Chicago, prompting everyone with a cough to say, oh, looks like I got the Zika. Okay, all right. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas asked a question in court today for the first time in 10 years. I think we have the audio.
I can only get the album on Tidal? Is there an app I could put on my phone?
That's just what I assume Clarence Thomas would sound like, since we never hear him. Last night, the Oscars hit us over the head with the controversy surrounding diversity. When asked for comment, old Hollywood was like, give me another martini, and for goodness sake, we get it. We'll make sure there's at least one black actor nominated next year, okay? Now let us be old and white and wear our ascots in peace. Then old Hollywood got so drunk that they killed Natalie Wood again. The Western Avenue Viaduct at Belmont is being torn down. When asked for comment, everyone was like, eh, okay. I feel bad there are no historians clamoring for some viaduct love. So here goes. This is for you, Viaduct. Hey, girl. I remember you. For all the potholes, for all the times that it felt like traffic was starting to move but it didn't. Oh, girl. For all the times I had to circle back because you don't allow left turns. Hey, you know what? You complete me. You made me better. Moment of silence for the Western Avenue Viaduct. Ugh, looks like I got the Zika. In weather, we just got another snowstorm coming through. Even though tomorrow is meteorological spring, which that sounds like something Tom Skilling made up for a promo. But have no fear, after the snow, it's going to get super warm, which is scary. But don't take my word for it. Just take Leo's word for it. Everybody loves Leo.
But Justin said the same thing last week. In sports, the NHL trading deadline came and went, and the Hawks stood pat. Only picked up 8 new players. Now I think it's time for a download sports talk radio guy. Is this team even trying to win? Is this team even serious about winning? Who do they think they are? Huh? That's download sports talk radio guy. Alshon Jeffrey will get about $14 million to play with the Bears next year after the team put the franchise tag on him. And after they put the tag on him, Jeffrey complained of soreness, so he's just going to sit out a couple. He's out for 6 weeks. The Bulls aren't sure if D. Rose will play against the Heat on Tuesday. In this case, I'm okay with that. Just win a couple more games, stay out of Cleveland's way until the Eastern Conference Final, and be ready for the playoffs. Basketball is all about peaking at the right time when you don't have talent. The Cubs and Sox are, yep, just check. They're still at spring training. That's about it. And finally, today, February 29th, an extra day for the leap year. So make sure it counts. It's like having your life's defense jumped off sides. You get a free play. Do you throw the ball away or do you heave it downfield hoping for a score? Or maybe a pass interference to get better field position? And how many timeouts do you have left? And, okay, well, may have lost the metaphor there. But the point, live a little, because tomorrow technically is today. That's the carryout for February 29, 2016. For leap year, we're running a special on frog legs. It just tastes like froggy chicken. You're welcome. Coming up, Download's resident philosopher, Al Janney, will be here. We'll talk about ambition. Why would anybody want to be president? But more importantly, why does ambition drive us the way it does? We'll talk with Al coming up here after the news. It's a Download on WGN. Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk with a business professor of ethics at Loyola University, Al Janney. We'll talk about ambition. Rob Martyr is here now. Hey, Rob, how's the weekend?
I'm doing well. It was fine. How about you?
That was good, man. Did you watch the Oscars?
Yeah, 2.5 hours of my life that I will not get back. But I did because Mrs. Rob likes to watch them, so we sat down and watched them.
I
thought Chris Rock's the opening stuff I enjoyed. The rest of it, eh, yeah, not so much.
I don't know. I was just, there was so much hype for Chris Rock's opening monologue. Like every person on the red carpet beforehand was like, well, I'm looking forward to Chris. And I'm like, all right, man, he's just going to do a monologue. And he did.
For those who saw it, again, I didn't mind the monologue. I thought some of it was good. He took shots at basically everybody, you know, called out what needed to be called out. There was that also cute little video montage that they did where it was Whoopi Goldberg in the one movie with Jennifer Lawrence, and then there was the woman from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, Leslie Jones.
Yeah, I mean, which I thought was very funny.
It was funny, yeah.
But then there was that other thing outside the Compton Theater, which I'm thinking, well, why?
It's just nonstop.
Yeah, these movies aren't marketed in the same way that other movies are marketed, so...
Yeah, I was like, all right, I've heard enough of it moving up to the actual broadcast, then the broadcast, then the after effect. It's all right, we get it. The Academy messed up.
They did.
They messed up.
Absolutely.
So let's move on. Next year. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, as the primaries continue on, we see more and more candidates dropping out, and the stakes are getting higher, the election getting more intense, and the question I ask every single night is, why would anybody want to do this? Luckily, that's a great question for the Download's resident philosopher, Al Janney. He's the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University, and the perfect guy to have in studio to talk about ambition.
Listen, you asked the right question. Why would anyone want to do this? And remember, this campaign started in 2013 when I think there were 14 Republicans and 6 Democrats running for the job. And now we're getting down, winnowing it down more and more. But the question remains, why does anyone want that job? Especially, just think about it, Justin. Think about this world right now with the economic problems, with the ecological problems growing, with listening to the reports every morning, there's going to be a financial crisis right around the corner. If it's not in America, it's going to feed back. What do we do with these burgeoning wars? What do we do with these terrorisms? Who would want that job for 4, and let's be honest here, probably 8 years? So the question for me is, why do you want it? And it comes down to what all these candidates share is they have ambition. And now the question is, What do you mean by ambition?
That's a good question because, you know, I can see at the presidential level someone being like, this is about legacy. This is about fame. This is about power.
Right.
But let's talk about ambition plays out to why people get involved in the state house in Springfield.
Absolutely.
Why we want to be governor.
That's right.
They're not all glamorous, but yet we still see people going through the room. So let's talk about it. I mean, what is it about ambition that stirs us as humans?
Well, ambition is not a negative thing. It's like the word power. Americans don't like the word power because it seems so brutal, but it's not a negative thing. Ambition, in some sense, can be lead to energy, enthusiasm, and efficiency, or it can lead to self-indulgence, self-gratification, and selfishness. So I think there's good ambition and bad ambition. For example, I want to be the best I can be in a classroom. I want you to be the best talk show host possible. I want my doctor to be committed and well-trained for his job. I want them to do it for the right thing, for the right reason, on purpose. That's good ambition, and that starts with the old Socratic adage, he who would rule the world must first rule himself. Why are you after this job? Why do you want to do this job? Are you doing it for status? Are you doing it for sinecure? Are you doing it because you can be somebody? Are you doing it because you feel it's a responsibility? It should be done. It has to be done. And as Bradley said to Patton, Georgie, you do this because you love it. I do this because I'm trained for it, and somebody's got to do it.
Well, let me ask you, Al, because, I mean, that's true. Like, ambition is a negative word. And we think about, as we watch politicians, and politicians aren't the only one. I mean, everyone,
absolutely.
We all have ambition. But, like, where does it go wrong?
Well, it goes wrong when you forget why you're doing the job or why you're after the job. To go back to the classics, you can never be wrong if you quote Greek or Latin. Cicero was afraid of Julius Caesar, not because Caesar wanted to rule Rome. Cicero feared that Caesar wanted to be Rome. And so there's this notion of, do you want the power for use for others, or do you want the power for oneself and aggrandizement of self? And I think that there's a real danger in that, why are you there? And I must say this about two of the candidates without choosing sides right now. Mrs. Clinton is suffering from, are you doing this for posterity? Are you doing this to be, A, the first woman ever to be president of the United States?
Legacy, right?
And B, to be the only couple to ever have this.
Right, wow.
You know, and in some sense, you know, Time magazine a couple of months ago had a picture of Bush and Clinton on the front page and say, you know, what we have here is a dynastic war. But the reality is maybe the American public is saying, not always openly yet, I wonder why she wants that job.
And maybe that's what this whole process is
right.
about, is ferreting out ambition,
right.
the bad ambition,
right.
to make sure you're not just doing this for yourself.
That's right. And Mr. Trump is working under the same incapacity right now.
Why does he want it? Yeah, right.
And our question in Chicago is, if he becomes president, does he take down Trump and put the president in that building? But the real issue is, why do you want that job?
Right.
Is it money enough?
But I mean, you just said, I mean, he has a building on Wacker Drive, you know, that has his name. I mean, at what point do the American people kind of say, you know, I think I like what he says, I understand what he says, but ambition is getting in the way.
Right.
That's going to stop me
right.
from voting for this character.
And I think this is about leadership. And I think we have to remember that leadership is the only game in town in America, and certainly the only game in town when it's a presidential year. We think leadership is a magical elixir. If we get the right person in the right job, they'll be able to handle the situation. And we're fascinated by leadership. We follow them constantly. And by the way, now I just found out that the president is required by law, by statute, now to have four photographers on board every day around him constantly to document every moment. But as individuals, I think we're fascinated with their private life and we're fascinated with their professional life. But we are after them. We think that this is the most powerful job in the world. It is. But why do you want it? And to go back a little bit again, St. Augustine, by the way, I knew him. We weren't that close. You know, it was slow in Egypt that year, so we got to talk a little bit. The quote that always moves me says, the first and the last job of leadership is the well-being of those that you lead, not self. Not persona, not family, not wealth. And what most of these candidates are not communicating, except Mrs. Clinton is trying really hard to say, I'm a policy wonk. I'm really doing this because I'm prepared for this. Look what I've done. I've been a senator. I've been da-da-da-da-da. And she's trying to say, I'm a virtuous person because I've done these jobs well, and it's not just ambition. Now the question will be, do we believe her?
Yeah, and let's talk about Donald Trump just a second, because I would make the argument that he is that selfless, that he is leading in this way that he wants to, as you mentioned, he wants to be like make the people that he's leading better, or he wants to make their lives better. I mean, that's what he talks about. He's trying to stir up.
I'm going to make this place better. We're going to take care of this.
We're going to do this for you because, you know, far too long you've been forgotten about. And that's resonating as we see as he's winning primaries. I mean, does that fall under the idea of good leadership, good ambition? I mean, do people see him as ambitious, but for
the part that's correct is I want to do this for you. I'm an American too. I'm tired of being put down. You're tired of being put down. I want to do this. Here's the problem with Mr. Trump, and I'm now reflecting as a critic and not my political bias. His pomposity is getting in the way of his ambition. Mm. His pomposity is getting in the way, his persona is getting in the way of the clarity of his thinking. And I think that confuses a lot of people on both sides of the equation. But yes, I mean, if it's true and he's saying, I'm doing this because I need not do this, but I'm doing this because I've conquered this and now I want to be of help over here. That's totally
Professor, let me ask you this, because, you know, ambition, it seems like, is one of these traits that's in everybody. Everybody
yes,
has
everyone.
It. And I wonder if that's part of the problem of why it goes negative, is because everybody has ambition and everybody's watching other people, especially when they go for the limelight or they go to run for office or to be a movie star or whatever. And they're reflecting, or they're almost like putting it against themselves, saying, I have that same ambition.
Right.
Oh, that person's a social climber. Oh, that person's doing this for this reason. That's not true. And, I mean, how much of it is our internal bias because the other people are using ambition?
Well, you brought up really an important point. First of all, I think ambition is connected to our natural competitiveness. We are competitive creatures. That is part of our DNA. We compete on anything. My sweet friend Johnny Latton, I used to play handball with him all the time when he was a little younger. I kept saying, Johnny, it's not a contact sport. You don't have to win this game. Please do not knock me down when you're going for the ball. I think being competitors is really important. But ambition is right next to one of the seven deadly sins, envy. And that's when ambition goes the wrong way. I'm doing this because I want this. I need this. I need to be called this. I need to be bowed down to. I need to be respected. I need to be somebody. So I'm after the post, not for the job for others. I'm after the post because it aggrandizes me.
If somebody's listening to this right now and saying, yeah, you know what? I was going for that promotion, and maybe I was thinking about me and not the job, or you know, maybe Hillary Clinton's listening.
Right.
She's like, Al makes a good point. What can you do to change course? I mean, you obviously want to continue to be ambitious,
right,
and have that be a positive trait, but what do you do to correct
it? It doesn't mean you have to be unselfish. Don't get me wrong. I think ambition is a good thing when it's properly harnessed. It does mean that you have to be prudential. It does mean you have to be logical about this. It means you have to understand your own talents and abilities and where they end. How many of us have not been in a situation where, you know, at a bar, it's simple enough, one more drink, and you know that next drink is going to put you over the line. You know, you're fine now. Maybe you're going to get in a cab and you're fine. The next drink changes you. And I think ambition is this delicate balance. But I think you know when you're not being ambitious, when Plato again said that truly virtuous people have to be pushed into jobs, that the truly virtuous person doesn't want the job but recognizes the job as a burden. Jerry Ford, believe it or not, I think Jerry Ford is underappreciated in this society, and we're forgetting him. He stepped in after Nixon. He said in a lovely quote, I didn't accept the vice presidency or the presidency because I needed the exalted position. I accepted it because it was my duty as a citizen of this society. I think he and Harry Truman have always put it in the best perspective. Mm-hmm. When Truman left the office, when he could have run for four more years, don't forget he had over 3.5 years as FDR's vice president. Then he ran again, and then he could have run one more time because it was only one time on his own button. He says, I think this is the best job I've ever had and the best house I've ever lived in, but I need to return to the higher calling of Mr. Citizen rather than Mr. President.
Al Genie is a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University. He's also the Download's resident philosopher. Al, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
See you soon.
It's true, man. You really got to time that out, too. If you got anyone who's listening who has kids, you know what I'm talking about. If you want to go visit the Easter Bunny at the mall and you get there, and if you pick the wrong time, you could be in that line for like an hour and a half. And then you get up there and they're like, no cell phone. Because I guess I get it. I get it because they're like, well, why would you pay for the asinine photo package? It's like $29 for four pictures or something like that. If you could just take a picture on your phone.
Yeah.
But still.
Who gets that money? Is it the mall get that money? The Easter?
No, I'm sure it's whoever is like the subcontractor.
Hmm.
The Easter Bunny himself? Probably not. That's just my guess.
Yeah.
So go out to Anderson's Candies.
Mm-hmm.
More authentic experience. Tomorrow night, we will be here for Super Tuesday. I'm very excited. We're going to have the Touche boys here, Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy. Also live in studio, Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. We'll also have all sorts of local politicians and lawmakers and delegates and people who have a stake in the election calling in to analyze the results. Super Tuesday, huge, not just a huge for the election, but a huge precursor for the Illinois primary, which is in 2 weeks. So we'll have that tomorrow night, the Super Tuesday election results here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. My name is Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight is one of the best pastry chefs Chicago's ever known. She's also the restaurateur behind the Bucktown favorite hot chocolate. Mindy Siegel has been working in Chicago kitchens for over 30 years. And after graduating from Kendall, she started at Ombria. She spent time with working for Charlie Trotter, Michael Cornick. She won the James Beard in 2012 for best pastry chef. The list goes on and on and on. So many great chefs have worked for Siegel. She's also authored the book Cookie Love, which is already in its second printing. It was just put out last year. And she was just in the news for her announcement that she will be making cannabis-infused edibles for medical marijuana patients. Mindy Siegel's in studio with me tonight. Mindy, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Let's start with the pot. let's just start right there because it's in the news. We'll just start. This is a big move for you. I mean, this could be an area that could be very lucrative and very successful because a lot of people want this, especially when it comes to medical marijuana and patients.
Yes. First of all, it has fortunately become legal in Illinois. And apparently, and I'm not sure the wave of the future is that it will be legal, hopefully. I mean, it's so crazy because I don't want to get political right now, but even though it's legal and there's a list of conditions that people can require a medical marijuana card at this point in time, as we're speaking, there are very few conditions,
absolutely.
It's very unfortunate.
Illinois is being very conservative.
It's crazy. It's almost not cool.
Yeah.
Just for the mere fact that, it, medically speaking, we're not even talking recreationally, but medically speaking, marijuana and all the different properties in marijuana have so many different medicinal qualities that help people. And it's unfortunate that we can drink profusely and it's legal and we can get in a car and kill people, but we can't smoke marijuana and we can get addicted to opiates and all sorts of things. And that's okay. But to do something naturally is not okay.
I think the reason people are attracted to the story that you've announced that you've partnered to be able to do cannabis infused edibles is because as people know edibles, they're like, okay, well, you make a cookie and here it is. There's pot in it. Good. It'll get you high. You're one of the best pastry chefs in Chicago, if not the world. How are you thinking about doing it? I mean, obviously, with your whole career has been about experimentation.
It doesn't matter what I am. I'm just someone that knows how to bake. Okay, you know, I'm partnering with a phenomenal company who has an enormous amount of people that are very intelligent in the field of extracting and growing marijuana and extracting the flower into oils. And there's multiple ways you can do that. And they share the same vision with me in this area as I do in my restaurant sort of world. And that's the pursuit of excellence in anything that you do. And that is why I was so, I guess, enamored with Cresco. Mm-hmm. They're really smart guys. They're businessmen.
This is the company, right?
Yeah, they're smart. They have integrity to produce a product that's going to be excellent,
right,
and not just for medical marijuana. We're going in multiple states.
Well,
so
we would have to
in order to make the brand work because Illinois is
You may not even find it here once it's done.
It has to change. Obviously, I'm an advocate for it. Personally, I am, and professionally. So,
well, let me ask you, because as someone who knows how to bake, with Mindy Siegel, someone who knows how to bake.
Mm-hmm. Better. Wave, thank you.
Okay, that's how we've established that. You know, for you, I mean, what I'm fascinated by is just the idea of the experimentation. I mean, the idea of working with certain strands or using marijuana as an ingredient to baked goods. I mean, for you, I mean, what's that process like? I mean, when you're thinking about, okay, this works with this. I mean, you've worked so much with textures and ingredients and trying to create the best pastry or dessert. Is it the same thing we're talking about? Like, I mean, is there a lot of experimentation to figure this out?
Well, first of all, the first two products that I'm coming out with are, because there'll be some phases. I wish I could tell you that they're called brittle bars or brittle bites. there's something completely different, and it's something that I'm working on, and I've been working on whether it would be with cannabis in it or THC or CBD or whatever it would be in it, the oils. They're delicious on its own, and they're very unique. And they're something that I've actually been working on for a while. They're like these combinations of brittles, chocolate, and blends of chocolate, like I do, and I approach the hot chocolates that we serve at Hot Chocolate. I could say that hot chocolates at Hot Chocolates.
Yes, you can.
chocolates in the Hot Chocolates, and really cool ingredients. So they're like chewy, and they're so good. I'll tell you a cute story. So my husband had one without it. Didn't have it was just non medicated, and he was like, "You are going to have to make them it like with very small amounts of dose in them because everyone's going to want to eat multiple pieces."
Yeah, right.
You know, you can't just eat one of these. This is unfair. So, and this is an interesting sort of subject of dosing. What's becoming very popular right now is microdosing, which is small amounts of milligrams in a bite. In other words, like the legal amount that you could sell is 100 milligrams. And this, I'm talking recreationally we're into Colorado. So each individual piece has to be 10 milligrams for like legally. It can be 5. It could be 8.
Up to, right.
Yeah. But 10 is a lot. And then to be honest with you, 5 is a lot. So 2.5 is like that perfect amount that gets you to where you need to be. But it depends upon what you're doing. I mean, some people are eating marijuana and they really just want the CBD, the cannabinoid in it. It's like the medicinal part of it.
Okay.
The THC is the euphoric, whether it be the indica or the sativa strain or a hybrid. So it just really depends on what you're taking it for, you know. I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy,
too. It's such an interesting field.
The edible
field,
which has always been kind of – it's one of those things where there's been no regulation in terms of how much is in – you know, when you talk about doses, how much is in different edibles.
It's actually very regulated now.
But it just feels like from the user standpoint that...
I mean, it is in Colorado. I don't know.
You eat a brownie, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
I guess that's the thing. Eat half. Don't eat a quarter. Maybe take a little bit and then take the next.
That's how it was, you know, when I was a teenager.
That's what I'm referring to.
We were like recreationally eating brownies from a mix. Duncan Hines, you know, you put a little marijuana in it. You have no idea what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, believe me, I know. I've had some really bad times doing that.
So there's a lot of distrust around it. In a way, they just don't know how high.
However, now that there are laws and there's advancement in the field, it's so funny because I went to Colorado and I did tours of all these grow facilities and, you know, dispensaries and, you know, you meet these guys from Colorado and they're like surfing guys. You know, they're like snowboarders. But they've been extracting oil from flower like their whole life. You know, and there's these young kids and you talk to them and you can't even have a conversation with them because they're so scientific and they know so much about the machinery and about how to do it and how to get it to the right point to have no bacteria, to have, you know, no other gases or whatever. You know, I'm probably making that up, but you know what I mean?
Is it a challenge for you as...
It was a challenge, but it's becoming less of a challenge every day because I'm learning so much about it. And that's why I went into this industry. It's a very cute story in my brain about how I came up with this story. Hopefully you'll like it. So can I tell you?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay. So when I was approached by Cresco, I was actually approached by a couple people. I knew I would be because of my reputation. Because, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm not, people would say I'm crazy. But, you
you're
know.
A rock and roll pastry chef.
A little bit. Just a little bit. I mean.
You're rock star.
I like soft rock, too. Right. I'm getting older. You know. But, you know, I started thinking about it in a moral sort of way. And I was talking to my parents about it. And I came up with the conclusion that the real reason why I am a chef and I own a restaurant is because I want to make people happy through food, through great service, through ambiance, through an experience. I want to make people happy. You know, I love walking through my restaurant, seeing people happy. And what better extension of my career and my knowledge is to make, let's just say, sick people feel better? Let's not even talk about recreational.
Right.
Or what if it was recreational and I wanted to make people feel happy in a controlled way where they knew exactly what they were eating, delicious edibles that made you feel good, whether you had cancer, whether you were sick, whether you had chronic pain, whatever it was. And I couldn't justify not doing it. And, you know, my father, who's very conservative, we talked about it. He started to read about it and read about marijuana and everything that's happening in the revolution of the marijuana industry. And he was like, you have to do this. You have to. It's like you're moral and you have to do it. And I was like, thanks, Dad. Thanks for making it okay. I mean, isn't that awesome?
It is awesome.
You know, so like, you know, my family, we have brunch every Sunday. And my brother is a child psychiatrist. He is very outspokenly pro-legalization of marijuana. And the four of us are sitting there talking about legalizing marijuana and the importance of legalizing it. And it's so funny because it's like, if this was like 40 years ago, I'd be grounded. You know what I mean? It's so cute.
We're talking with award-winning pastry chef Mindy Siegel, also a restaurateur behind her restaurant in Bucktown, Hot Chocolate. Let's take a break. We come back. Now we'll talk about your story, how you got into this work, and we'll leave the pot to the beginning. Does that sound good?
Cool. Yeah.
Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Mindy Siegel, a woman who bakes. Does that work for you? No.
Yeah.
Award-winning pastry chef whose restaurant, Hot Chocolate, is in Bucktown. She won the James Beard in 2012 as for Best Pastry Chef, as well as just awards after awards after awards. She's an author, Cookie Love, which is in its second printing.
I'm the thing I'm most proud of, actually.
That is the thing you're most proud of.
It is.
Out of all the things that you've worked on, I mean, for winning awards and pastry chefs and as being an author.
I would say that is absolutely up in the top two. I don't know. I had such a great experience writing a book. It was awesome. I had something to say, you know. I mean, obviously.
What's the other one? What's the other thing you're proud of?
You know, I've been able to employ approximately 40 to 49 people for the past 11 years and give them a job and give them spending money. And I've seen people meet each other in my restaurant and get married and have families and... Yeah, it's pretty rewarding. Make other people chefs. I mean, the extension of you is very rewarding for me. And I'm proud, very proud.
We're going to talk about your life in the kitchen because, you know, you came out of culinary school and you got to work with some of the best. I mean, I mentioned at the top, you know, after Kendall, you went to work at Ambria, worked with Michael Cornick, Charlie Trotter. Talk about what brought you to them. I mean, what made you want to get into pastries?
Well, first of all, I did work with some great chefs that we all know about, but the thing that we don't really talk about are the people that I worked with on the line who taught me so much, not just about cooking, but about the spirit of cooking and the integrity of cooking. And I've worked with some really cool guys that were amazing that taught me that. And you don't even know who they are. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's all those people. Yeah, I worked for Charlie Trotter. Sure. Yeah, I did. But the people that I worked with in the kitchen that have been made lifelong friends of mine, like Bill Kim, you don't hear about them, and it's sometimes sad. But even the kids in my kitchen now that I think are phenomenal, you know, they're so good.
Well, there's a whole life that, you know, people don't know about in the kitchens. I mean, I've had chefs in, and we've talked about it's not just this celebrity chefdom where you're in the front and what a great restaurant you've created. I mean, there's a lot of work. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that goes into it. And there's a lot of...
No crying. In pastry. That's what we say.
I say that
to my staff. There's no crying in pastry. Why are you crying? Cry on the inside. Like a winner.
Cry on the inside.
Yeah, it's hard to do. Or go in the walk-in so no one sees.
All right, so talk about that. When you first started, I mean, I would assume you had to go through a lot of this ritual, a lot of like, this isn't good enough. Do this again.
Well, nothing's
we're teaching
good
you.
Enough.
Yeah, so
nothing's
talk about
nothing's ever
that.
Good enough. It's never good enough now. It's never good enough. It's always can be better. Always. And that's hard because when you, and it's, you know, something that I identified very closely with working for Trotter was that pursuit of excellence, it's innate in you, and you either have it or you don't. You don't have to talk about it because you know. And it's a different. There's a difference between having that innate sort of like I'm in the pursuit of excellence in my craft as opposed to always wanting to be good and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference because you will never do the right thing. And sometimes and most of the time when you don't do the right thing, you teach yourself something new. So never be in – embrace the mistake.
It's got to be so hard, though, because working in a kitchen, I mean, there are deadlines. Well, there are things you got to get out on the line, right?
Yeah, and, you know, you have these kids that come work for you, and they're so tightly wound up and nervous and intensified by the rush of being in the kitchen and working with people and people that are known or whatever it is, talented. And they get so caught up on – I have to be perfect, and there is no perfect. There's no such thing as perfect. Get it out of your head. It's so hard to get that out of somebody's brain, and you have to sort of, like, retrain people how to think.
But how do you do it? I mean, you just said, like, the idea is that nothing
is
perfect.
You yell, scream, and break them down until
but,
they
but
cry.
It's the pursuit, but it's the pursuit of perfection. I mean, yeah, it's inside you. So how do you marry that when the idea that nothing is perfect, but you're pursuing perfection?
Well, first of all, it is a requirement in my kitchen that you watch Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Requirement.
Okay.
I have two copies of it. I also give people this list of what my expectations of what a cook should know. And they're, a lot of them are like philosophical. They're not even like, you need to learn how to dice an onion.
Right.
You know, they're like, do you know what the person next to you is doing? Do you know how to pair a glass of wine or a beer with your dish that you're cooking every night on the line? Do you know what it tastes like? Do you know how to season? Do you know the importance of salt and pepper? Do you know the differences between all the salts? You know, blah, 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 blah. You know, so, you know, it's like, I mean, it can get crazy. But, you
know.
Have
you always been this
intense?
No, not intense. Philosophical or reflective about it.
Yes, I'm very. No, absolutely not. You know, I'm older now and I'm wiser, and I made a lot of mistakes working in a kitchen and working with people and owning my own business and opening my own business and being mean to people and instilling fear in people and thinking that was how you were going to get the best of them. And one day I had an epiphany, and I realized the importance of the golden rule.
What's the golden rule?
Do unto others as they would do to you. And I realized that that was like the key to success. It's very simple.
Very simple.
Very simple. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Speak to them like they're your peers. Speak to them like their matter counts. Speak to them like it's important to have them in your kitchen.
But you had to learn that. Because, I mean, you just said, I mean, you,
I mean, I'm still learning.
You made mistakes. You were too mean, things like that.
Yeah,
like, at what
awful,
point?
Uptight. I mean, like, wound up. A mess. And so I smoke pot now.
let's take a break because I want to get to the news, and I want to come back and continue the conversation. Award-winning pastry chef Mindy Siegel and restaurateur, her restaurant Hot Chocolate in Bucktown. We're talking about I'm enjoying this conversation. We're talking about life in the kitchen and the lessons that you've learned about your life from working in such a high pressure environment. Mindy Siegel, of course, 2012 James Beard winner for Best Pastry Chef. We'll have more with Mindy when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight, award-winning pastry chef Mindy Siegel. Mindy's restaurant, Hot Chocolate in Bucktown, has been there for over 10 years now.
11.
11 years. I remember when you opened. I used to live right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I was reading stuff about you before we talked today, and you had said at one point, I'm not sure that this restaurant feels like me.
True.
What does that mean?
It was actually in 2012. And I don't know, throughout my career, I could tell you I had a really bad year that year. I had a really good year that year. That was a great year. I had really good hair that year. I made great desserts that year. That was a really bad year. You know, it's like there are ebbs and flows. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Sure.
2012 was this year that I, you know, I had been nominated for the James Beard Award going on my sixth time. And I was just like, I'm never going to win, you know. And, you know, whiny baby, totally distracted in things I should not be distracted in. And I don't know. I was overworked. I was working in the kitchen a lot. I had a chef that year that I hired, and I hated this person. And he made my insides crawl.
Oh, no.
And I did not like him. And it was giving me, like,
it was anxiety. Yeah.
You know? So I was just like, I don't like my restaurant. I don't like the food. I don't like the – look at this room. It doesn't even feel like me, you know? And I decided – we had saved some money, and I decided to redo my restaurant that year. And I decided to make the restaurant feel like me more, way more than it was.
What does that mean?
I decorated. I designed it. I redesigned it. I took, you know, the light fixtures out, and I bought light fixtures, and I spent the entire, like, sort of, like, winter going to flea markets and, you know, buying stuff that I felt like reclaimed wood tables and lots of iron and, you know, metals. And so it really felt industrial, and because the room is very industrial.
Well, you mentioned also that you had seen Hot Chocolate as a different kind of restaurant when you envisioned it, that it was going to be a late night kind of dessert. There was a real movement at that time about that.
I have no idea. Yes, I did. And it's like, you know,
it was like
I have,
dessert,
you know,
dessert
what can
bar.
I tell you? Yeah. Like what I felt in the beginning, what I know now, you know, but I, you know, and then you know, that philosophical part of me comes in. And it's like, I couldn't have gotten here without getting there and doing that without doing this. It's like, so there's no regrets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I decided to redo my restaurant. This is a cute story. You want to hear it?
Of course I want to hear it. So, does it look like I don't want to hear it? I feel like you keep saying that to me. Like, you want to hear it? Yeah,
well,
I want to hear it.
Because I'm like, blah, blah, blah. So, I'll tell you. So I decided in November to go to Miraval because I heard that Miraval had this, like, program to handle stress. It was a week-long program. I had money saved. I'm going. So I get on a plane. I go. Before I go, Michael Korner calls me on the phone, and he says, look, do not leave there without doing the equine experience. You have to do it.
Miraval's a
it's a holistic health spa.
Yeah, right. It's like a wellness.
Yeah, it's like, kumbaya, that kind of stuff.
So you were going down. This is, which, you know, I mean, for you and your reputation at that point, you're like, you are a taskmaster. You get things done.
Yeah.
You're abrasive.
I was like,
you're
I needed to check out. I needed to refigure my restaurant. I needed to go. So many people told me about this place. So I went by myself. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do the equine experience. So you have to understand it, that at this point I was having so much anxiety about my restaurant and my life. And it was crazy, crazy. So I stayed an extra day. So I go and they pick you up in a van. And I know what's happening. I know what's going to happen. I know this is going to change my life. I know. I already know this. So I'm hyperventilating in the van with like eight other people that are going with me to share this experience. I cannot control. I'm crying. I can't stop crying. It was like this thing took
over. Before you even got there.
I didn't even do anything
yet.
You're
the van.
Yeah, I'm already like freaking out about this whole thing. Right. Yeah, it was crazy. So we get there. We're paired off with two other people. And I kept saying to everybody, I'm really sorry. I'm just an absolute wreck right now. And I apologize. So I get there, I have this partner, and these girls in their cowboy outfits and their cowboy boots, they're like, this is what you're going to do, and you're going to go up to the horse, and you're going to pick the hoof up, and you're going to clean the hoof. And they're like, but you have to understand that if you're very nervous and uptight, the horse will sense your energy. And it won't, and he will not, or she will not, the horse will not respond to you.
Exercise, right.
That's why people do horse therapy.
Right, sure.
So I walk up, you know, take a deep breath, and the horse does not respond to me.
Oh,
so
no.
I'm like,
maybe it's a bad horse.
Blah, blah, blah.
Is
you
it possible it's a bad horse?
No, I didn't even think about that. But I'm a wreck. And the girl comes up to me. I mean, she couldn't have been more than 21 years old. She comes up to me. Obviously, I've been working with horses her entire life. She comes up to me, and she says, what's wrong? I say, it's not working. I'm a mess. I can't breathe. And she's like, well, what are you afraid of? I said, I guess I'm afraid of the horse not picking up his leg. You know, I'm failing at this. And she goes, what would happen if he didn't pick up his leg? I said, he wouldn't pick up his leg. And she goes, well, will you still be you? And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, then when is enough for you?
Yeah.
I can't. There are no, woo, birds flying in the air, you know, like, oh, my God, this young kid just told me my life lesson.
When is
it enough enough?
When is enough enough?
Who cares? Let's be you. Relax. So I was okay,
and so coming back, was that the point where you sort of looked at what you were doing in your restaurant and
completely
how you were treating people
way.
And everything? You said, you know what?
Completely wow. In a different way. Completely.
That's so interesting.
Completely in a different way. And I walked up to that horse and he lifted up his.
Oh!
And I got to tell you that these people that were with me all wrote me a letter and said, you changed my life.
Wow.
I cannot believe it. Blah, da, 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 da. It was unbelievable. The next day, I did a huge hike in the Sonoran Desert to watch the sunrise, and I went home. And, you know, believe me, I had to do a lot of work after I got home, but it was, you know, I mean, and you know, it didn't resonate with me for a couple of years, this whole philosophy of letting go, but I learned it, And it was a great life lesson because I came back, I fired that chef, I changed my menu, I redid the restaurant, and I got the Beard Award.
Wow.
Good energy.
It's interesting to me because it almost flies in the face of what, I mean, in a way you were taught and what you knew about perfection and the idea that, you know what, this has to be done better. This has to be, it's not right. This is, you know, this is not enough.
Well, if you go back and you think about when you were a child and you were doing something that you wanted to do, whether it was coloring on the wall or taking apart all the toilet paper or whatever it was, and your parents screamed and yelled at you, you didn't learn anything.
Yeah.
You had to learn it on your own. Well, this isn't right. This is not the right thing to do. I think, like, I tried to adapt that whole philosophy in teaching my staff, not necessarily my recipes or how to crack an egg, but how to be the right team member in a team.
You've kind of changed roles. Yeah. You know, in the last year, you went from being, you know, this was Mindy's restaurant. It says Mindy's Hot Chocolate. So you were from the beginning to the end. It was your experience and everything. Everyone worked under you. And you made a conscious decision to say, still my restaurant, but I'm going to oversee. I'm going to let other people. And you say this is the best year yet for the restaurant.
Yeah. I think because it allowed me to have the perspective of everything as opposed to having the perspective of the cloud. I think when you are so involved in something, you don't know what's going on. But when you step back and you look and you reflect, you're able to see things in a different way. And it's the truth. You know, it's like the same thing. I tell this to my staff. You've made that recipe 5 times the same way, but you expect to get a different result every single time you make it. Why don't you do something, one thing different, and think about it? And maybe you'll get a different
result. Does Mindy Siegel, who's running the kitchen, who's in there in the heat, in the kitchen situation, do you give the same advice? I mean, or
yeah,
is
no.
it the Mindy Siegel that has moved up here to
no,
the
no,
overseas?
No, no, no. I give this advice to everybody. This is the new Mindy.
New age. New age Mindy.
Yeah, yeah. But this is the truth. I mean, this is not a lie. This is the truth. So I am not the chef. I'm not the pastry chef. I'm not the manager. I'm just the owner.
Was it hard to make that transition? It
took me a year. Yeah, it's still hard. I'm in my restaurant 6 nights. I'm not in there 6 nights a week, but I'm there every day. And sometimes I go on Monday when we're closed and I fish around. Yeah, but, you know, I'm very closely involved in my restaurant.
Yeah.
I only have one restaurant, so where else am I going to go?
Well, let me ask you about that because, you know, as we kind of wrap up, I want to ask you about Chicago because you've dedicated your life and your work here in town. I mean, you've
Until now,
right?
Dun, 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 dun. No, yeah, until now.
Until now.
Yeah.
But let me ask you about that because this town has seen an explosion in talent and restaurants. I mean, it's become, like everyone says, the culinary destination for America. And you've been a big part of that. I mean, you've been one of the names that have just drawn people here, that's work has been rewarded at, you know, at the national, international level. Talk about what your relationship is like with this city, with Chicago, with the customers, and more importantly, the restaurant scene.
I was just about to break out in song, but I decided not to. No, I was going to sing Chicago, but no. Well, I'm from Chicago, born and raised. You know, Chicago's restaurant scene is very incestual. We have a good community. We're primarily all friends with each other. You know, I can text anybody and the answer's yes for the most part. Same with me. I mean, people ask advice for me all the time. So it's actually a really good community of people. It sure has changed a lot in the past 5 years.
How so?
Well, the amount of restaurants that have opened up and the amount of multiple restaurants that restaurateurs have opened up and restaurant groups and hospitality groups and what used to be a small group is now a big group. And sometimes I think it seems as if the soul of the restaurant has changed. And there is a new resurgence of single standing restaurants from one owner. But, you know, they're opening up their own restaurant. And then who knows if they're going to open up a bar. Then they're going to open up this. And they're, you know, it's like, I feel right. like no one is just settled doing what they're doing. It's like the constant thing. And so what's happening is that it's creating a chef shortage, a management shortage, an alcohol shortage, you know. And it's hard because the person who has this one single standing restaurant has a much disadvantage to the person that has the multiple restaurant for multiple reasons. And I mean, I don't want to say that it's sucking the soul out of our city, but and you know, I'll get in trouble for that probably. But
but you're new age Mindy. You don't have to worry about it anymore. I don't care.
But you know, it's I want to say something really bad right now, but I'm going to hold myself. I'm going to go like this. Keep my mouth shut.
What you're going to say. I mean, you're just saying that. I mean,
it's not a good time right now for people like me in the restaurant industry, because I don't have the backing of an HR department, of a director of operations, of multiple restaurants that I can pick and choose and pull. And I don't have the financing to, you know, say to like a purveyor, well, I have 10 restaurants, so I want pricing for the 10 restaurants.
Right.
You know, it's not like that. So I'm a single, you know, I have to make it work. Make it fair, make the portions, you know, and it's like everything's really expensive and it's really hard. And I've been really lucky, but you know.
Do you see a time where running a restaurant or, you know, even being involved in pastries will be a thing of the past for you, that, you know, that maybe this industry here in Chicago will be without Mindy Siegel?
I don't know. What do you want me to say?
I don't know.
Possibly.
Possibly.
I mean, I'm 48 and a half and three quarters. I mean, how much longer can I do this? I'm a lifer in the industry, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I love my restaurant.
Yeah.
I have a closing date in mind. I will not say.
It's just a lot of that tonight.
But I have a closing year in mind.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, right now I'm really enjoying my restaurant. I absolutely love my chef, Aaron Arnett. I can't say enough about him. I love my pastry chef, Becky Brodsky. I love my managers. I love them all. So,
Mindy,
so I just, you know,
yeah.
you know, Brooke and Michael, I'm trying to give them, you know, I'm giving them props right now. It's Simona. They're all great. My mom helps me run my restaurant.
Well,
so it's like,
I want to say that, you know, I want you to come back on the show because I feel like
part two.
Yeah, I don't know. There's much more than just, you know, I do interviews with chefs and we talk a lot about what they're working on in the restaurant or what they want to do with the menu. But rarely do we get to a place, you know, a philosophical place about what this work means and what it means to you and what the city means. So I'd love to have you back.
Of course.
Award-winning pastry chef Mindy Siegel, her restaurant Hot Chocolate in Bucktown. Also, she's the author of Cookie Love, which is already in its second printing. So the list goes on and on. We'll do the rest of your bio next time you're here. Mindy, thanks for coming in.
Yes.
It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, coming up 9 o'clock with the halfway point of the download tonight. Mark Baser is here. It's the 8th anniversary of the interview show at the Hideout. One of the greatest shows in Chicago. You got to go see it. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty much like a Johnny Carson, Dick Cavett type show that's live on stage in the back of the Hideout, hosted by Mark Baser, who's, you know, done a lot of stuff in media. He's been a columnist at Red Eye. And that seems like it was 25 years ago at this point. But he's here, and we're going to talk to him about the 8th anniversary of the show at the Hideout. And Mark is going to talk about that coming up here. Also, we're playing the worst tonight, so that's going to be fun. Adam Burke is here. Blake Burkhart is here. And we are going to give away tickets to Poi Dog Pondering, which is going to be coming up, and also a couple free pizzas, right? You know the drill. We'll do it at 9:30. 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst, like I said earlier? Breakfast DJs, the worst. You go to a brunch, you don't go just to eat and listen to, you got friends. You got party of seven, party of five. You want to catch up with people you haven't seen. In the background, you got like, mixing it with P. Diddy, like, you know, what they want from me. I'm like, are you kidding me? This should not be the new fad.
Breakfast. Don't forget the champagne fountain.
Right, exactly. Who here wants a mimosa? was not happy. So I would say hashtag the worst.
More sausage links coming. More exactly. Sausage links on the way.
Breakfast DJs. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez will take over. Live from San Diego, California. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. She's out there doing the Marine boot camp, which is her and Mark Carmen, Jackie and Sinead. Like, essentially, four or five people from WGN flew out there to do this Marine boot camp. They're going to talk about it tonight. So I'm training for the stair climb, if you heard this on the station. And when I say training, I went to the gym once. And then today I climbed up the Tribune Tower 34 flights. Yeah, no big deal. What you think of me now, WGN listener? So I'm going to do that stair climb that Dave Ennett and the WGN team is all about. I'll get the details on that, but it's on Sunday. I'm going to do, but you could do like, it's at Presidential Tower, so you can do like all four towers, or you can do just one. And I'm doing one. And then I'm going to sneak out. While everyone's taking the group picture, I'll get the group picture in, and I'm just going to sneak out. Because the worst thing that can happen is if you get like too ambitious, and you're like, well, I'm going to do the second tower, and then you throw up. Right? That would be the worst thing. Like, you know, I don't want to, that's the whole goal. The goal is no throw up. I don't care about, you know, the burn in the legs. I don't care about, like, I can't breathe. I just don't want to be that one guy who's like, oh, God. I can't be that guy, right? So that's coming up. I'm going to do that Sunday. All right, well, you know what I should do on Friday, but we're working. So if you're not, you should go see the interview show with Mark Baser, the 8th anniversary of the interview show. It's at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia. Mark, who is a regular here on the show, good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
8th anniversary.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
We're just going to play your show, though. We're going to put up a boombox on the stage.
It's not that entertaining.
I don't know.
You really need to. You need to get the chair and the couch.
Yeah, but that stair thing, like, is that even good? It's not good. Is it good for you as exercise?
It doesn't feel like it's good, but
it's bad on the. It's got to be obviously bad on the knees.
Yeah.
So what? Like, in the end, it might do more harm to a person than.
It probably.
Positive.
But I don't. I think that by the idea of it just being a stressful thing for an hour. As opposed to like going up and down. It's called Fight for Air, so it's really for firefighters in the American Lung Association. So firefighters climb this thing with their gear on. Like they put this stuff on their back and they're like, this show you how we go up and down stairs and we do this to be in shape. And, you know, but for me, I mean, yeah, you're right. I don't understand how it's good, but it felt good.
Will you have like your fanny pack or something like that?
I might go fanny pack. Yeah. I haven't decided if I go half shirt. I was thinking half shirt, like Miller Lite half shirt kind of thing where you just do it where you show the belly. And a fanny pack.
Yeah.
Could be good. Got to get like those runner shorts that guys wear where you could pretty much see their butt. You know, their bare butt. You know what I'm talking about?
My dad has those. And and he left one behind. They stayed over at our house, and he left them behind. And I play basketball actually here at the Tribune. And I thought I didn't really think anything of the shorts. And all my other shorts were dirty. I hadn't washed them. So I said, I'll just wear these. And everybody, I mean, I don't think I like everybody was talking about it, like and making fun of me.
Were they like neon or what?
They're
like
black, yeah. But yeah. It was just, I mean,
like, too much. They're like flaps. They're like mud flaps on a. Semi.
It was, and then when you're playing basketball, like, you know, yeah. it's just.
It's too much butt. It's too much butt.
It was a lot of butt. I don't know.
How is your dad?
My dad is pretty good. He's at the stage of life where he writes letters to newspapers and calls me to read me the letters.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
And sometimes they get in.
Something. I met a guy who told me, and I realized he's like, I'm a published author. And I was like, oh, why? He's like, I'm read by millions of people every time I publish something. I'm like, all right, where's this going? And I realized after the next thing he said that he was a letter writer to a newspaper. And
you know, then, there's a guy, there's, you know, once in a while you'll Google yourself. You shouldn't probably do it, but, and there's a guy with my name. There's only one other guy with my name that I can tell in the world. And all he does is write letters to small papers in Florida. And I just, I, because nobody would ever think it was me, except for me. And it drives me nuts. I'm like, do people think that this guy, that I'm writing letters to small papers in Florida?
Here's what you should do. You should write the letter to the same paper as Mark Baser, but it's a counter to Mark Baser. I mean, that's a perfect bit.
I vehemently disagree with Mark
Baser.
Yeah,
right.
Mark Baser is an idiot.
You keep publishing Mark Baser, right.
Do you know my name? Did I ever tell you this? My name, I have the most, and this guy as well, because we have the same name, the most violent name in the history of names. Because in Yiddish, Baser means angry person.
Oh.
And Mark is the god of war, Mars, named after Mars.
It suits
so
you. I think it's
together.
It suits you. Yeah.
Together. And when I got married, when I first started dating my wife, Gina, her grandmother, who knows Yiddish, got really frightened. She was like, don't marry this. She's Russian. Don't marry this man. I'm like, why? He's a Beza. And
he's a like, Beza.
Yeah,
he's
an
Mark.
Angry person.
Right.
And
she that literal with the like translation of
she's
last
an old,
names?
Old,
I think Kaufman is like a steelsmith or a blacksmith.
But that is obvious that you no longer have that profession.
Right.
Baser is something that would be passed down from one angry man to the next angry man through centuries. I mean, she's also of the generation that believes that anything can be healed with cabbage.
Right.
So
that generation,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
What's wrong with you? You got a headache? Just rub some cabbage on your forehead.
So, Mark, you got your 8th anniversary of the show.
Yeah, I'm excited
coming up.
For it.
That's exciting because, I mean, I've been in the show. We've been around that hideout space for a long time. I think 8 years of doing it. I mean, what's evolved over the years? When you think about the going back and looking at the first couple times you were on stage, what and you think about the last one you did, what do you feel you've improved upon?
Yeah, I think I did improve, and then it started to go back down, kind of like a bell curve kind of thing. I hope it starts up again. Much more comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but you used to tell me because I'd get up there and I would do my intro bit and I'd have a music stand
yep.
and I'd be kind of reading my bit. And one time you pulled me aside and you said, Mark, not while I was on stage, but later. And he said, you can't read this stuff.
Yeah.
And that should have been obvious to me, but
so you
wasn't.
Were going up there, you would have your monologue that you would read or what you would, and you would have like a script essentially, and you'd
yeah.
be reading off a script in a live stage show, which was a little bit confusing because you're like, I don't understand. Like, so, but that was because you weren't necessarily a stage performer, but you grew into it.
Yeah. And now, I mean, now I'm one of the great stage performers.
You are. Yes.
So,
no, but I mean, that's something you see all the time because it's just like, almost like a combination of live lit. When you go see a live lit show, where someone's a writer and they've got their and they come up there and they get their piece and they just feel comfortable in just reading a script, and I find that to be just like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah,
I'm like, you're on stage and entertained. Like, you spend some time, spend 2 or 3 days memorizing it.
Yeah, some of us don't have that time, Justin. Some of us just don't have.
Well, you do now.
No, I do. But you're right. Now I haven't. It's been 6 years since I would read an intro bit. Although I did do a reading the other night. And
did you read it?
I just read it.
You punks, man. You're just all you live lit punks.
Well, I wasn't getting paid.
you'll memorize it if you're getting paid?
Yeah.
If Claire Zolke gave you
like
25 bucks.
Yeah, yeah, 25 right. bucks. That's all it would take.
All right, let's take a break. We come back. I want to talk about the show you got coming up, but I also want to talk about The Hideout, because The Hideout, we were just talking about this, I think with the Right Club guys or with one of the groups, that The Hideout really dominated and created a new kind of show with the 6 o'clock and the 6:30 p.m. kind of show they do in the club. It used to be because they would do it, you know, before the band was up at 9, so they're like, Mark, you can have your show at 6 p.m.
Yeah,
and everyone's like, that's the worst time ever, which has turned out to be the best time ever. We'll talk with Mark Baser.
Little did they know.
So we'll talk about the explosion of shows like Mark's and others at The Hideout. When we come back here, the interview show is at The Hideout, 1354 West Wabanzia on Friday night, the 8th anniversary show.
Is it Wabanzia or Wabanzia?
What did I say, Wabanzia?
Yeah, you said it very, very fancy.
Well, I'm kind of fancy.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what they know me
Wabanzia.
Here.
Wabanzia.
You know, if you were doing like the midday or maybe in the morning, they would say Wabanzia.
Yeah.
Here, but here Wabanzia. At WGN, I'm a little bit more refined. I come from the Milt Rosenberg school of... of broadcast.
I do remember when he used to talk
Wabanzia.
About Wabanzia. Yeah, he did a whole show on Wabanzia.
Wabanzia. My guest tonight, Mark Baser, The Interview Show, Friday night, 6:30 p.m., the 8th anniversary of The Interview Show. Who are your guests this week?
I have the former governor, Pat Quinn. I've got Toronzo Cannon, who is a blues musician. Yep. Do you have him on Chicago Way?
No, I haven't, but Tim bent my ear last time I saw him at the Hideout about this. He's a great, he's a truck driver, he's a CTA bus driver, he's amazing.
That's a good invitation.
Man. You know, blues in the city, no one pays attention to blues.
That's really good.
If I and no, I liked him, but I'm like, if I talk for 45 minutes, that would be a good Tim impression.
That's we have this pastry chef, maybe you've heard of her, Mindy Siegel.
Right.
On the show. And then we have Hebrew Brantley.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh, so tell him we said hi.
I absolutely will.
He's great.
Tell him GN.
Just
GN
tell him. Tell him Justin and Pete.
Okay.
You know, no, he's wonderful, man. He was a really good interview.
He's
when
been
we had
on before.
On. It's super funny because when we had him on, someone complained, like there was like a comment and they said, just now, they were mad at me and the format of the show. And they said, just now, it was Kaufman just had a sculptor on for an hour. That's what they said. He's a sculptor on for an hour. Like, he's a little bit more than a sculptor.
He was talking, right? He wasn't just sculpting while he was on the...
It was just like, they were trying to make a point that I was
audio,
like super
the sound
boring.
Of the maneuvering of clay.
I'm like, if you think of sculptors, I'm like, I guess he's a sculptor.
I don't know. You can't let the...
The haters win.
The sculptor critics.
Right. So that's great. That's a great lineup, man.
Wait, 8th anniversary.
Let me ask you, when you think about that show specifically, when you think about Hebrew Brantley, Mindy Siegel, obviously Governor Pat Quinn. I mean, when you think, do you try to go with a through line with the guests? Do you try to make each one specific for almost like it's its own thing? Or, I mean, how do you kind of work it when you have such big talent on one show like that?
Yeah, totally. They're their own thing. I don't know if you do this too. I always have a narrative in my head of how I think an interview could go. And then I kind of hope that it doesn't go that way, that the guest takes me somewhere else, but that I'm not going to, if the guest either doesn't talk and is just sculpting the whole time, that I can have that narrative to fall back on and take it where I think it can go.
Earlier in the week, you're Monday, right? So what are you thinking about for Governor Quinn?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess what interests me more than I will ask him policy questions. I'll ask him about what's going on now. I'll certainly ask him about Rahner. I'll ask him about the election. But I also, I don't know, I'm kind of interested in what it feels like to be a politician. It seems like one of the things that is appealing about Governor Quinn, whether you liked him or absolutely hated him, was that there was a genuineness to him. He didn't. When you think of other politicians, you think of somebody, you think of, I don't know, people from both parties, and you think, I don't know if that person necessarily believes that, or I don't know if that person really cares. Mm-hmm. And I don't think most people question that about
Quinn. He's considered like he wears his heart on his sleeve kind of thing.
Yeah, and so that to me seems like that's a real person, and which is often alien to the world of politics,
right,
where you're often not betraying what you really feel. And sometimes that hurt him.
Let me give you two things that I think you should ask him about. One, early on in his career, he did either a State of the State or a budget address where he was off script, and he was just every third, he was like, I forgot what it was, but I remember there was like a lot, like you need to, like it was meandering, it was like 45 minutes of him trying to wing it,
okay,
which did not work.
Yeah.
And the second is hand mowing his lawn in that commercial where he's, I'm just a regular guy, and he's got the hand mower. Like out in front, he's like, I'm just mowing my lawn like everybody does in their bungalow thing. And I was like, nobody has a mower like that.
I got to tell you, though, I have two mowers.
You have a mower like that?
I have a hand mower. I have a regular mower, too. But there are some times when I just, for whatever reason, I just feel like I want to get back to the land.
You want to get, yeah, right.
And I want to just, I don't want the fumes coming up at me. Or it's like, you know, I got kids. So you wake up and kids wake you up at 6 in the morning.
You don't want to
be with them. You'd rather be with the lawn, but you also can't wake up the people around you. So that's when the hand mower comes in.
Also, I would say right towards the end of like the last week, he had a commercial where he was playing basketball. Do you remember this one? He's like, sometimes I miss. Dong! And he misses. He's like, hey, but what can you do? I mean, we're human.
Who got a lot of credit from that lately? Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders was playing basketball with his grandkids, and everybody loved it.
Yeah,
Obama plays gets basketball. A lot of
but
play
it, nobody's nobody thinks, oh, Pat Quinn, man, and let's go out to the hoops.
But you don't think Bernie? You don't think Bernie Sanders?
Yeah, and
right?
Of course, and that hurts.
And
you
it
shouldn't
turns
be
out
doing that.
He's incredible.
He's like, I don't want to watch the guys who play basketball who hit the square. Like,
would
that's
you
what
watch,
they're pointing
would you,
to.
They should do the Republican candidates. There's not that many Democratic candidates, but bring O'Malley back. Bring Bloomberg in.
Right.
And just have a basketball game. That'd be a fun game to watch.
Like before an all-star game?
Yeah.
You know, like they do the kids game, and then they do like the alumni game. Now they do the politicians running for president's game.
Yeah. I once saw a hockey game that was just mascots of food brands, like the Starkist tuna and stuff. Yeah. And it was hilarious, and I think it could be equally as good to do this suggestion that I just came up with.
I think Battle of the Network Stars style presidential campaigns would be good.
There you go.
All right. So what do you think? I mean, as you get ready here, we kind of teased out the fact that, you know, the 6:30 shows have exploded at the Hideout. You and I were at the Hideout not too long ago, and they're like, there's a Saturday show at 11.
I know. And
they have taken every single time that you wouldn't think that there'd be a live performance, put it there and succeeded.
I think one thing that is that people want in an age of obviously so much information online and so many things, so much content. I hate that word, but that's what people call it. That people do crave a live experience. I think also that the Hideout, while it still has a youthful scene, it kind of came up a lot, like it's 20th anniversary this year. So people are older, and I mean, I'll just be honest. Like, I don't want to do a show at 10 o'clock at night.
Right.
I'd want at 10 o'clock at night, I want to be thinking about how I was at a show 4 hours earlier.
Right. That's essentially all of us now.
Yeah.
That's me too. I'm like, oh man, what a great,
I can't even climb the one flight of stairs at my house, let alone whatever tower you're climbing.
34 flare.
I get home after the show, it's 9 o'clock, and I just reflect on how it went a little too late.
It was just a
and
little
And I just collapse on my couch.
It's a far cry from when we were doing comedy shows at 10, 11 midnight,
yeah.
Right? That's it.
But I will say this about the Hideout and those shows, and you did the nice imitation of Tim. But one of the things that makes the Hideout great is that Tim Tutton is the most generous person in the world. So, and I think it came out of that. He was saying to himself, or he said to anybody who would listen, okay, I got these bands, but I want to get these guys on too. I got to get these guys on. They're doing great stuff. And I know I can't get rid of the bands, so let's just put them in there. It was all about, like, anything is possible. I want, these things need to happen.
And that's
the best thing you want.
When you started the show and Claire started her show, I mean, there was nobody. I mean, it was sort of like a Friday night at 6 o'clock, and there was nothing else really going on. Now it seems like every single night of the week that is booked.
Yeah, it used to be. I used to say, hey, I can't do it this Friday. Is there any way I can switch? Like, yeah, absolutely. And now it's
you
got to
book
chance.
Out like a
no
month,
chance.
3 months in advance.
Yeah.
Mark Baser, the show, the interview show, is on stage at the Hideout on Wabanzia. 1354 West Wabanzia. It is 6:30, but I would arrive early because there have been many a time where I've showed up and then got really mad at the bar that they wouldn't let me in.
You?
Let me take that back. I tell you that I got mad, but I actually got excited because then
didn't
I was
have
like,
to go.
No, I didn't have to go. I went home and I'm like, that was the best show ever.
I'm just going to go to Epic Burger.
Right. I just did a 10-minute night out. That was great.
And I can tell Mark I went.
Yeah, right. Tried to go, bud. Sorry.
That's sweet. That is sweet.
So if you want to see the show, get there a little early. If you're a friend of Mark like me and you just want to support him, go late because it'll be sold out and then you can just say you were late. Right?
As long as you pay.
Well, you don't pay.
Oh, you don't?
No, because it's sold out. You just go, oh, man, so sorry. I text you.
It's $5 if it's sold out.
That's what you should do.
Yeah.
For showing up, there's like a toll.
Yeah.
It should be $10.
It's $10 to get in, by the way. $5 if you get there late and you can't get in.
Right.
Yeah.
Mark, good to see you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
It's going down, y'all.
All right. It's Monday night here on WGN The Download. Excited to announce that it's time for hashtag the worst. We do it every Monday here in 2016. If you're a regular listener, you know the segment. This is where we collectively bemoan and complain about the worst things in our society. You know what's the worst? Stale ice cream. Right? Just the worst. I mean, that happened to me again. It's like, that's the worst. Or, as I found out here, the worst is when I don't properly lid stuff. Like, I didn't properly lid something in the fridge and it went bad.
Was it ice cream?
It wasn't ice cream. I know. I mean, it would be great if it was.
Stop keeping your ice cream in the fridge.
That might be part of the problem. All right. My comedians are here. We've got great guest judges, panelists here on the show. But the stars of the show are you, 312-981-7200. I'm sure you have some choice, the worst for us tonight. And to incentivize you, we're giving away tickets. Giving away tickets to Poi Dog Pondering at the Paramount Theater in Aurora on March 4th, one night only. Experience these amazing artists for a sensory overload experience. Order tickets online at ParamountAurora.com or call the box office at 630-896-6666. Poi Dog Pondering. And, of course, we got Lou Malnati's Pizza helping me out tonight. Two gentlemen who you can find on stages all across Chicago. Adam Burke.
Hello.
Good to see you. Good to have you here, man. This is exciting.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah. It's been a long time. Adam Burke is headlining Zanies on Tuesday, March 8th. Also here, Blake Burkhardt. Blake, good to see you.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks for having me.
No, man, it's great. Okay, so you're going to be playing at Andorka's Comedy Review in Pilsen. It's the next one's March 11th, but it's every second Friday in Pilsen, 2110 South Halsted.
Yeah.
And you're also in the sketch group Actual Murderers, which is Beat Kitchen every Tuesday.
That's right.
All right. Thanks for being here, Blake.
Yeah,
all right.
Thanks for having
me. All right. 312, the lines are already lighting up. 312-981-7200. You can call or you can text and be a part of the worst tonight. Why don't we start with you guys? Did you guys bring in some choice cuts yourself? Blake, why don't we start with you?
All right. Thanks. Yeah, there's a few things that bug me. Number one, as being the worst, is the aggressive high-five guy. Like the one who needs to high-five everyone. It's usually after a sporting event.
Right.
And I just don't understand it.
It's equal opportunity. Like, he's got to get a high-five with everybody there.
Sure. And when they're aggressive and they kind of get in front of you as you're trying to just get to your car or something, God, Lord.
And these are the same guys who do it for places where it's not appropriate.
Right.
It's like, yeah, we made it successfully in the door. Why are you high-fiving?
Sure.
Yes.
I like when you body up, when you go straight up two hands. Like, you don't let the person get past. You just go two-hand, kind of, it's almost like a body bump.
Sure, I love a good high-five just in general, but, you know, I'm not a germaphobe, but just the idea of everyone touching the same hand for minutes on end, hundreds of people,
Would you high-five germs?
Would you viruses, high-five an high-five. Actual germ? Yeah. Oh, the idea of them? Yeah.
High-fives the Zika virus. Come on, get in.
I wonder, just like the aggressive high-five guy in a sport which scores all the time.
Right.
So, like, I think of, like, basketball. Like, that'd be the worst, right? It's like every basket they do that, that'd be the worst. All right, Adam Burke, what do you got?
This is such an old man one, and I hate it. But I want to give a class showing people how to go to the movies.
Okay.
Like,
all right.
Like, I hate to say it.
That's right.
I'm not singling out millennials or people who are mainly used to watching movies on Netflix. But if you're going to go out to the cinema, I don't know. You know what? The start time isn't a suggestion.
Right.
We're not going to wait for you.
Right.
You can't just show up in the middle.
I'm always amazed at how many people are late to the movies.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, I'm like, I had to be there. And I get like some anxiety about it. If I get close to being late, I'm like, oh, I got to move faster. Yeah. I got to get there. I'm like, I feel like I got the weight of society on my shoulders. Yeah. Never do I feel like it's okay.
And they come in, and they'll come in, and they'll barge by you like you're in, like, in the dorm room. Like, hey, how's it going? What are you talking about? How's it going? You know the lights are off, right? What are you doing?
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. Why don't we go to George? George, you are on download. It is the worst. What's the worst, George?
The worst for me lately has been trying to get my WGN fix, and hitting Lower Wacker Drive, and then just hearing a mile and a half of white noise, middle of the night TV, Poltergeist static.
You don't change the channel? You just let it play for like
I'm not a quitter, and I'll never give up on WGN. I'll never change it. I'd rather listen to Static than any other show.
Thanks, George. Thanks for that. That's good. That's good. It's true. Like, what a committed listener.
Yeah,
like,
loyal guy.
Oh, this is terrible. I can't hear it. I guess I'll just leave it on until I can.
Can we build George like some sort of apparatus, kind of like the antenna on the Back to the Future car, where it just like sticks up in the air?
It snakes through Lower Wacker to find a signal. That would be the Lower Wacker AM antenna. Let's go to Brad. Brad, you're on the worst. Thanks for joining us, Brad. Brad, where are you from?
I'm up north. I'm up in Gurnee.
Gurnee, okay. What's the worst?
Yeah, so, you know, what's the worst? You know, since up here, a lot of the roads have, you know, two lanes, some three or four. The worst are those people who go the speed limit in the left lane or drive right next to somebody because they say, oh, this lane's open, I'll move over here. Well, the reason it's open is so the normal people who try to get somewhere can pass you.
That's a classic, yeah.
If you're looking in front of you and like the road's open and then behind you there's a big line of people, you're that guy.
Brad, are you driving right now? Are you about to hit someone?
not physically, but literally, I would love to hit somebody for getting in my way. I'm trying to get somewhere.
There you go. Thanks, Brad. Thanks for that. Yeah, I think about like he's talking about like those big roads in Gurnee or even the expressway. When I'm driving on the expressway, what gets me is I'll be like, the worst is when you're going 85 and somebody's right on your tail.
That's the
worst. You're like, come on.
Right.
What do you expect me to do? You expect me to go 100?
Also, your car needs to look different. You need to paint Evel Knievel stripes onto your car so we know that you're about to go jump a gorge or something.
Right.
You're not a normal human
being. Adam Burke and Blake Burkhart are in studio with me right now. We're playing the worst. I got a lot of texts, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We come back. We'll continue with the worst here on The Download. Stay with us. All right, it's the worst here on The Download. 312-981-7200 is the number, 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst. If you don't know how to play, it's pretty simple. You know what's the worst? Cashiers who get irritated that you want to bag your own groceries. That is true, right?
I would love that if I was a cashier.
I know, yeah, but there's some cashiers that are like, what are you doing? Why are you touching that stuff? You're like, well, why can't I help?
But surely that's going away now because you can't have bags. You've probably got your own, you know.
Right.
Antique grocery bag that you brought along with your that's already got your dog in it.
Right. You know what's the word? Antique grocery store bag. Adam Burke. This is our guest here tonight. He's headlining at Zany's on March 8th. Blake Burkhart is playing at Andorka's Comedy Room, a review in Pilsen, March 11th, every second Friday in Pilsen. Also part of the Murderers sketch group that's at Bee Kitchen every Tuesday night. All right, let me go to the text. Let me get some of these in here. All right, 773's. You know what's the worst? Derek General Soreness Rose. Yeah. I'll fight that one. I don't think so. It's basketball. If you're a basketball fan, LeBron James isn't playing. Yeah. Like they all take breaks, and it's February.
General Soreness sounds like the mascot for like a muscle cream or something.
Right. I'm General Soreness. Right. He's got like a hat and a left. Yeah. Looks like Napoleon.
Exactly. Yeah, he's holding himself because he's aching. Yeah.
I wonder if Rose will do something like that, like once he retires, like kind of make a joke of himself. We'll see.
He'll be like the Ben Gay mask, and like he'll be a spokesperson for a TV show. Right. All right. Let's see. The worst. I like this one a lot. 224. The worst. Sitting behind a row with at least five young kids to watch Deadpool. Oh no, that'd be the worst movie with young kids in it.
I think that's weird that they would be there. The flip of that for me is when I go because look, I'm not proud of this, but I like animated movies.
Sure.
And I hate going to see a kid's movie and feel myself getting angry that the audience that it's for is there. I'm like, would you 9-year-old shut up and let me watch Frozen?
Trying to watch Inside Out. Who brings these kids Inside Out? That's so funny. Have you seen the movie Anomalisa?
No,
which was
I haven't.
Up for a,
I just saw that.
Did you
see very it? Interesting
yeah.
movie. Yeah.
It's the first rated R movie to be up for an Academy Award in that category.
I believe that.
Because it's always like animated. It's always like, oh, boy, we're having so much fun. And then you have this one, which is life-size puppets having sex in a hotel room.
It's a heavy movie.
Yeah.
It's right here. I know it's
so you can go to that one. You won't have any. Unless you're I was surprised that Deadpool, as we get off topic for a second,
right,
went that direction, went rated R. Because the kids, I mean, I have an eight-year-old. He loves Deadpool. Like, he has a concept of who that is and all the marketing. But right, the actual movie is pretty sexual innuendo, rated R. Like, everything yeah, about it is not for kids.
I was surprised how far they went with some of those jokes in there. But
right.
What's hilarious now is that they want to make every superhero movie because it did so well. Now they're like, let's make them all. Right. I don't think we need to have Spider-Man get his get his clothes off.
Yeah. All right, Blake, what do you got?
All right, this is a big one for me. When people complain about how little money they make or how little money they currently have, and they say a figure to you and it's more than you have, and you weren't complaining in the first place, you know, that's actually a tough one to swallow.
Who says that anyway? I mean, who's quoting figures when they tell you how broke they
it's
are?
It's rude people, I guess.
But they do it in a roundabout way. They're like, oh, man, times are tough. Only one holiday. There's only one vacation. We're going right, to have to choose between Cancun and skiing.
Yeah, it's just so hard. I mean, it's just, let me tell you about my W-2. Yeah. Right. No, that's the worst. Anyone who talks about money in that kind of way.
People it's always
bad. Well, they're like, oh, my 401k really took a hit. And it's like, okay, well, mine didn't because it doesn't exist.
I was in a bakery a long time ago with a big time radio personality in Chicago. Like, he was in front of me, and I'm like, oh my God, it's. And I go, oh man, let's see, man. Good to see you. I listen to you all the time. He's like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be coming back, though. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like getting the order at the same time. Like, I'll have a cupcake. He's like, well, you know what they want to do? I mean, they offer me $205. And I'm like, I'm not your agent. I don't care about your money. But it's like totally weird. I got really uncomfortable because I'm like, you're quoting like your actual negotiated figure.
Yeah, you're like, that's a coincidence. My order number is 205.
Right. That's right, exactly. And that's why I got into radio. Okay, Adam, what do you got?
I love bartenders for many reasons, but there's a certain breed of bartender in fancy bars. They're normally like a better looking bartender who act like tending bar is secondary to the job. Like, not normally in there and the place is empty and I'll like order a drink and they'll be like,
yep.
I mean, I guess I could like pull this thing and fill it up with liquid. I mean, if I have to.
Oh, that's the worst. The bars that like it takes 15, 20 minutes to make the drink. It's kind of the same syndrome I have with like a ice cream place when I want to order a milkshake. I feel bad. Like, you're at Potbellies and you're like, oh, I guess I'll have to, can I get the shake? Hoping that they're not overworked to have to do that.
Right.
That's how I feel now with mixologists, where I'm like, can I get the fancy old fashioned?
If you want to feel, this is a friend of mine, I'm paraphrasing a friend of mine, but if you want to feel a full bartender's wrath, go into a bar about 11 o'clock at night and order a Bloody Mary.
that's
a way to get no drinks.
All right, let's bring in Pete Zimmerman. He is our resident, the worst expert, I guess I would say. Pete, I don't leave you out. What do you got tonight?
This is something that's been annoying me recently, and it's when you take the L home or to work or whatever. You're on an L. It's crowded. And people come on with their huge backpack, taking up three spaces, and then whipping around, and you kind of got to jostle around them because they got this huge backpack.
What do you do? I mean, are you suggesting that they're the worst for having the huge backpack, or the way that they swing it around in crowded space?
When you have this is a note to all you backpack wearers on the L. When you have a backpack, you know, that's on your back, when you get on the L, take it off, lay it on your feet. Put it on your feet. Lay it on the ground so your back is not taking up a spot for a person.
I have a better suggestion. Bring your bag on. Open it. Climb inside the bag. I'll put you on the seat and hide there until it's your stop.
That works too, right? Okay, let's go to some of the texts here. I got a lot of texts to get through. 773. See, I love reading the text because it gets so specific. The worst is when you're in a car and the person driving purposely drives over a giant pothole just to annoy you. Really? That's not a real thing. Like, I think, like, are you sure that you're not taking that personal when it's not personal?
I love that this person puts pranks over the value of their car.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. 847's got a good one. Pimples at 48 years old.
Yeah,
that's the worst. Anytime you get pimples as an adult.
Because you know what the thing is about it is that your friends who may love you and know you, for they are going to stare. They can't help it. They're just like, I mean, that's really, that's there. That sure is there.
Oh, this is good. 773's got a good one. Watching restaurant employees clear a table, wipe down the seats with a wet cloth, and then wash the table with the same cloth and set the silverware and plate directly on the table. God only knows what the towel rubbed off those seats. That's great.
I get that, yeah.
Here's what I feel. I feel you go either one way with your restaurant cleanliness. Don't go to all that, you know, all that show of like we're so clean and then we know it's not.
Right.
I like a diner kind of where the guy just uses his greasy hand and just kind of wipes it off. Yeah, it's close enough.
The one that gets me, and they always do this, and it's always at like the traditional like Chicago places that you'll see on the Food Network, like, and there's nothing better than the Chicago dog. And then you see some guy just taking his hand into the French fries and putting on a plate, like serving up like Chicago does. And you're like, that's so gross.
No, that's what makes it Chicago.
That's what makes it Chicago.
That's right. The seasoning is that guy's gross hand.
Yeah. All right. Adam Burke, Blake Burkhart in studio with me. We're playing the worst tonight. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do more. 312-981-7200. We're giving away Poi Dog tickets.
It's going down, y'all.
It's the worst here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200. We're going to go rapid fire. Got a ton of texts to get through, some calls. 312-981-7200. You know what's the worst? The dog next door. Right? Everyone loves your dog. Your dog's great, but the dog next door. Shut up.
It's just with a hair trigger for everything. You can't be startled by everything. You got to pick and choose something.
It really is.
Like, evolutionarily, you would have been a dead dog. You can't. We need to know what's an actual threat.
Adam Burke is in studio with us. Adam is headlining at Zany's on Tuesday, March 8th. Blake Burkhart is also in studio. He is going to be at the Andorka's Comedy Review in Pilsen on March 11th and every second Friday. Also, he's with the sketch group Actual Murderers, which is at the Bee Kitchen every Tuesday. All right, so guys, let me go with you guys first, and then we'll get to all the texts. What do you got, Blake?
Well, this one happens probably more often than the other two I mentioned, but when someone begins to tell you a story or a fact or anything, and right when they get to the point of it, they say, oh, you know what? Never mind. I'm not supposed to tell you this, or I can't tell you this. And then they just go on with their day, and they know the information. Yeah. And then it just eats me alive. And it's usually
like they
something.
Come with, they go, oh, I forgot. I shouldn't have told you this.
Yeah, I can't finish that.
And they don't finish it?
No, well, a lot of times they don't.
I like to think that they were about to tell you a secret about yourself back to you, and then they remembered, I know this guy who has this real debilitating illness. Oh, no, wait, shoot.
Right.
Shoot.
And usually it's probably nothing, but in my head for the rest of the day, I'm thinking it's the craziest thing that I really should know, and they're not telling me for some crazy reason.
I'm going to die because I don't have this information. Yeah,
my doctor does it to me a lot.
He's looking at an x-ray. You know what? Never mind.
It's kind of cruel, I think.
All right, Adam, what do you got?
Speaking of dogs, it's my girlfriend's dog knows when I'm running late, because then that's when it takes the longest time to go to the bathroom. It just knows. It knows I have an Uber on the way, and it's like, nope. The dog knows.
The dogs that know, that's the worst. That's the worst. All right, good. Speaking of dogs, what do you got, Sam?
Are you familiar with cuties?
Yeah.
Little oranges?
Yeah.
The worst is they only come in packs of 200.
That's right. You can't get like 6 of them.
You can't get 8 for a week.
So good.
You just need like a month.
I love that they're always like, it was another bumper harvest for cuties.
We should sell these at bulk, man. We're selling ourselves short. All right, let's go to the text. All right, let's see. 773. The worst, Uber drivers pulling crazy Ivans. I guess it's, yeah.
You know,
because they don't, what is it?
Crazy Ivan, it's from the movie Hunt for Red October. It's when you kind of like do a U-turn unexpectedly. You wait till someone gets right behind you, and then it's like, it's a submarine
maneuver. That's what they say, yeah. The submarine reference. Because they don't know where they are or what they're doing, and then they flip you off. Yeah, okay. 815, the worst is calling into a radio station and having to turn down your radio and not being able to hear yourself. That's very specific.
That's, and somewhat vain.
Yeah. Yeah. 773, the worst is driving away after getting gas, and then you left the gas pump still in your tank.
What?
Especially when you literally rip the hose off the pump machine as you drive away.
No.
Wow.
I think your issue is that you're living in a slapstick comedy film. I've never seen anyone do that. Were you
crazy.
On the run from the law?
All right. 815's got winter weather, salt on my truck. That's up right now. 815, this is good. When parents sitting in front of you think you want their baby watching you during a flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like universal the worst, right? And it's just the idea that you would let your baby do that. Like, oh, God, good, the baby's not paying attention to us.
Well, what you don't know, Justin, is that baby is very often a Sky Marshal. Baby's just doing its job, Justin.
Hey, you know.
Just keeping it safe.
Come on, man.
He's sizing you up. Yeah.
That's great. The worst, 773, the worst is when someone is heavily breathing over the phone and you can't hear one word they're saying.
That is tough. I used to be in sales, and when that would happen, it was always.
Do you think they were doing
afternoon.
It on purpose?
Oh, man, I never thought
you?
Of that,
yeah,
but yeah, probably.
What I really want to believe is the person who submitted this one is a terrible 911 operator. It's just someone having an attack of some sort. Yeah.
This guy's just breathing heavily and complaining.
These guys with his asthma. Forget it. You're not getting a squad. 773, the worst is when people text at a green light and never move their car until the light turns yellow. Does that really happen?
I really hope that person texted that in.
At a green light. The worst is when you buy those fruits at the vegetable or fruits or vegetables all cellophaned up with the styrofoam on the bottom. On sale or clearance. I don't really know if there's a clearance for fruit and vegetables. And they look all okay on top, and then when you get home, you open them up, and there's a hidden mold colony underneath.
Especially if it's 400 cuties.
Yeah, yeah right. That happens with strawberries. That happens to me all the time with strawberries. 630 says the worst is missing a Poi Dog pondering show. All right. That's pandering for the Poi Dog tickets.
Poi Dog pandering.
Yeah. There it is, right. All right, let's see. What do we got else here? Did I do this one? 847, middle of the night leg cramps. Yeah, that would be. That is the worst.
Those are rough, yeah.
I my 8-year-old's going through growing pain type stuff, so once in a while I'll be like, my leg hurts. And I'm like, well, all right, well, not life. You know, I don't know what to tell you. Sidetracked. All right.
I think the middle of the night leg cramps, and also as you get older, needing to pee more when you're at night. That's just that's God's just, way of telling you he hates you.
224's got one here. The worst is not being able to take allergy medicine for a few days before allergy testing. So you have to itch and sneeze and cough in order to get tested to find out why you're sneezing, itching, and coughing.
All right.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, right.
Do you really need to know? So you're basically complaining that you're not allowed to take the cure?
Yeah, I think that's
on to find out what's. Yeah, that's a very philosophical question. But I need to know what it is.
All right, 630. When you can't sleep because you snore too loud.
That is a good one because that
you
always
wake yourself up.
That always gives you the weirdest dreams. Like this is just like an old bear coughing on a rabbit in your dreams. Oh no, wait, that's me.
I'm up. What happened? Okay, what do I got? 773. People who say vase instead of vase.
Which is correct there.
Some of these are so upper class. Some of these ones, people who put the gardenias in the vase, not the vase.
773, that itch on your back. That's true. That is the worst. 773, expensive flowers that die after one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the worst. Especially when you give them to somebody and then you're like, oh, I paid like $25 for these and they die the next day and you're like,
do you know 50% of the cut flowers in the world come from Holland?
Oh, really?
Like, that's madness. Why are we doing that?
Poor Holland.
No one really, no one, be honest, no one likes flowers that much.
Right.
No
one really would be okay with changing the sentiment.
If they went away tomorrow, no one would give it that.
All right, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We'll come back, and we're going to give away two pizzas and a pair of tickets to Poi Dog Pondery. Not in that order. Or no, in that order. And yeah, in that order. This is a download here on WGN.
I got worldwide family all over the earth, and I worry about them all for whatever it's worth. From the birth to the hearse, through streets the guns burst. Words I disperse are here to free minds. Yeah. And if mine are needy, I need.
All right, it's the last segment here of The Worst on WGN Radio. Adam Burke is headlining at Zany's on March 8th.
Yes, sir.
Also, Blake Burkhart is playing at Andorka's Comedy Review in Pilsen on March 11th. He's also part of the Actual Murderers sketch group, B Kitchen, every Tuesday night. You guys got any leftovers that we haven't talked about before we go to the final three?
Yeah, I think I got one more.
All right, what do you got?
Well, this is, I think, for maybe every comedian ever. Hopefully Adam can relate. But having an idea and being real excited and not having a pen, that happens
that's
to
the
me.
Worst.
Like, oh, man, that for any creative
don't you
type.
Don't have a phone now that you just put in the notes?
Sure, but, you know, sometimes I don't have my phone on me. Like, it doesn't happen. Yeah, I try right. to be prepared, but it happens,
you know,
maybe once every
much,
other week.
You know how much of a jerk I feel like going into a phone idea for a bit? Like, I've come up with a play.
Yeah. Let me, okay, bit is, it's the worst. No, I've been there many a time. How about you, Adam? We got any more?
No, I think we covered it all.
All right, good. All right, that gives us all right. Let's do it. We're going to have the top three here. Let me read the prizes, and then we will go to the top three. So these are the prizes we're giving away. For third place, Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. We're going to give that away for third and second place. That's nice. How we roll.
Nice.
All right, number one. It's going to be a pair of tickets to Poi Dog Pondering at the Paramount Theater in Aurora on March 4th for one night only. Experience these amazing artists for a sensory overload experience. Order tickets online at ParamountAurora.com or call the box office at 630-896-6666. All right. So let's go ahead and get to the top three worsts tonight, February 29th, the leap year edition of The Worst. Number three... Number three is 773. The worst is driving away after getting gas when you left the gas pump still in your tank, especially when you literally rip the hose off the pump machine as you drive away.
This guy. The thing is, it's kind of the worst thing that happened to you. It's definitely you're the worst thing to happen to that gas station
right.
in a while.
It's so amazing.
Yeah, that's an expensive tank of gas.
Yeah, I mean, do you pay? Do you keep driving? Do you just like take off?
Oh, you gotta go back, right? Well, I don't know.
I mean, there's gotta be cameras.
I'd love to the polite honks of other drivers when they see you drive past.
Oh, excuse me, roll down your window. Still have.
I would just get off the road if I saw a guy driving like that.
Yeah. All right. That's number three. So 773, you're going to get a pizza from Lou Malnati's. Number two is from 815. Number two is when parents sitting in front of you think you want their baby watching you during a flight. And I left out the first time. Jeez. So 815, when parents sitting in front of you think you want their baby watching you during a flight.
The only thing more adorable than a baby staring at you is the phrase, jeez.
I don't know. I would just not let my baby do that. If I had a baby, I'd be like, I would have, like, maybe after like 10 seconds of it, I'd be like, I recognize how annoying that probably is.
Right.
Turn around. I had that happen one time. It was the worst at a White Sox game where I was like hanging out. I was like a date night, I think. I had like, we were in the beers or people. And then this like little 6-year-old girl just turned around and like was just staring at me the entire day. And it's the worst, right? Because you're like, oh, hi. All right. And you're like, okay, all right. Turn around. Right. So that was no good. All right. Here we go. All right. So number one for tonight, let's get this guy out here. What did I do with it? Here we are. Are you ready? We got him on the line as well. Let's go ahead and call it out. The number one, they're going to win Poi Dog Pondering tickets. The worst is when you're in a car and the person driving purposely drives over a giant pothole just to annoy you. Patrick's on the line. Patrick, congratulations. You won the worst.
Oh, yeah. I've been trying for the longest, you know, for a long time. So I've been listening to you for a while, ever since I was 10 years old.
Okay, right. Well, that's a long time to be listening to a show that's been on for 8 months. Patrick, I don't understand. We have so many questions.
Yeah.
Somebody you know is actually driving over potholes to annoy you?
Yes. My brother, my big brother, who is 23 years old.
Oh, wow. It sounds like my game system,
like my DS, uh-huh. And then he would find a street with the biggest pothole, and then he'll just turn right on over it, make me bounce all over the place. I'll mess up while I'm playing the game.
Oh, so when you say you've been listening since you were 10, you were also talking about 8 months ago. Like,
yeah, right.
Sounds like the threat that your dad would make. Like, I'm going to drive this car right into a pothole.
You'll put that video down. All right. Well, Patrick, thank you so much. Congratulations. A very strange one that our comedians loved. So you win the tickets to Poi Dog Pondering. Are you familiar with Poi Dog Pondering?
No, I'm not.
Okay. All right, there we go. Patrick, thank you so much. We're on the line. He's not familiar. Too bad. It's a great band.
I think we've got the official worst. The worst when you're trying to get free Poi Dog tickets and somebody doesn't even know the band wins.
Yeah, there's a new
one. Somebody
worst.
Out there's like, Poi Dog. They're trying so hard. They're racking their brain.
I apologize.
They're all over Facebook. They're like, here we go. And then Patrick wins. I don't know. I'm not even old enough to go. So there you go. This is amazing. Adam Burke is headlining on March 8th at Zanies. Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
And we'll have you back. Blake Burkhart, you're also going to be at Andorka's Comedy Review in Pilsen on March 11th. And then with the sketch group Actual Murderers, you'll be at Bee Kitchen every Tuesday. Great place. Blake, good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, yeah, let's get you guys back. And thank you for playing, everybody at home. The worst. It's Download here on WGN Radio, live on North Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase Studio here in WGN Studios. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club. They call themselves Roughed Up Power Pop. Gotta ask what that means. The band has been prolific, producing 4 albums in the last 5 years, and their new album is called Don't Buy This Record. And you can't get it all at once. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club is releasing a song a month as opposed to the whole album. The band is in studio with me tonight. Let me name some names. William Geeritz. That's accurate, right?
That's accurate. Well done.
Paulette Bertrand. No relation to Steve Bertrand. No relation. We already figured that out. Dan Passarelli on bass. Luke Smith on drums. And Darren Gregg on guitar and trumpet. I don't see the trumpet, but that's okay. We'll next time.
And
cowbell, right. Thanks for being here, you guys. This is a big band. I like this. This is great. This is awesome. All right, so William, why don't we start with you? I had to ask the question to start. The Roughed Up Power Pop. What does that mean to you guys?
It's got a bit of an edge, typically, and tonight won't really represent that because we're unplugged. But most of our stuff has a little bit of an edge, but it does have kind of roots in power pop, and we think of things like Material Issue, you know, way back when.
Mm-hmm.
Weezer, The Rentals, Big Star, Matthew Sweet, stuff like that's heavy in our background.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, that's a. I love that kind of music. I remember seeing Material Issue as a Columbia College kid back in the day, trying to get in there before it all broke out. Yeah. Let me ask you about the records, because you guys, I said at the top, you guys are prolific. I mean, your first record that you put out was 2010. I mean, and you guys have just. It seems like every 6 months you're putting something out. What's the formula? What's the recipe to putting out music fast?
Well, I think it's just kind of constant. We love doing it. I always kind of say that Luke and I are a bit of kind of studio rats. And so we just get to it whenever we can. You know, sometimes we'll have stretches where we can't really do a whole lot just because we're busy with this gig or that gig. And other things in life get in the way, but we kind of always come back to it. But everyone in the band also kind of contributes. We've all, you know, we've got some good songwriting power here. Pretty much all of us, the three of us sing lead vocal at different times. And so, you know, we kind of spread it around. I think that variety goes to, you know, you see that in some of the albums too. In fact, it's kind of hard to make it all one project sometimes when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the preferred method of putting music together for you guys? Is the idea of collaborating and everyone bringing in a different song? How do you guys actually pick the music and produce the music?
I think, you know, we kind of come, each one, you know, maybe somebody will come with an idea and then we can work on that idea. It kind of typically involves... you know, we get Luke in there early on, I think, with getting the rhythm section going. And then I guess I kind of produce it for the most part. So I kind of maybe try and keep a cohesion with that, but I also try and do what, you know, kind of listen to what they want to do, you know, what kind of song is this going to be? And they'll tell me, you know, I want this kind of guitar part or, you know, this kind of backup vocal or something.
Well, I want to talk about the way that you guys are releasing the new music, and we'll do that after. But first, let's hear some live music. And what are we going to hear here?
This next song is called, or this first song, I should say, is called Hustle. It's called Hustle.
Hustle.
So, and it's not a disco song.
All right. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club, the track Hustle, live here in our WGN studios here on The Download.
Ethic to the street, get to the crooks, you know you're taking some heat, you make the rest of us look like we're walking and driving, yeah. Get into it, avoiding the cut, you keep the beat moving, you jump on the bus and we're still walking and driving.
Hustle me, walking the driving.
some smooth music. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club, a Chicago band. They just played Metro last week. We just missed that. The song Hustle. We're going to talk about the new album, Don't Buy This Record, the way you guys are putting out the music. Talk more with the band and hear live music. Let's take a break here on The Download. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club live in studio here on 720 WGN. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, live in our Allstate Showcase studio with the band The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club, Chicago band. The new record is Don't Buy This Record. That's the new record. it's a trick. Don't do it. We've got the band in studio with us tonight. William Geritz, Paulette Bertrand, Dan Passarelli, Luke Smith, and Darren Gregg. All right, so I want to hear some more music because that stuff was great. And I know you guys got two more tracks, so we'll try to get it in before Patty takes over. But tell me about the record. I mean, the concept right now is that you guys are not releasing the whole album?
Yeah, excuse me. We're doing something a little bit different, a little unconventional, but it seems over the past 10 years or so, the whole music industry is a little less conventional than it has been.
Right.
So we decided to kind of do something to sort of give back a little bit to our fans. And maybe challenge ourselves a little bit, too. So we're releasing one song a month for free. Free download. Just go to bishopband.com/2016album. bishopband.com/2016album. And we can download some of our new songs for free.
Now, is the idea that you guys record all this at one time, and are you continually mastering new tracks?
That's why it's a challenge, and it's a mental exercise and a creative exercise that's really different than we've ever done before.
Do you feel like you try to keep track of that in a sense, that you're like trying to weave a theme through the record, or this is track one, this is track two, this is track three kind of thing, or you just like kind of finish a song and put it out?
Seat of our pants. I mean, we're making sure it's good and fits what we want to do, but we have like, you know, stuff in the barrel, you know, stuff that's about, you know, kind of ideas that are pretty well developed, but they haven't been really put down, and it's not really decided what's going to be next. So it's kind of exciting, and it's an adventure for those who want to join the Daredevil Stunt Club.
All right, the Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club. You can find that information on their website, which is
bishopsband.com/2016album.
You got it. All right, what are we going to hear now?
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
You gotta treat yourself.
I like that. Treat yourself. All right, Treat Yourself, the Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club, live in studio here on WGN.
Stay.
my go. All right. That's great. Live on WGN, the Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club. William Garrett's Paulette Bertrand, Dan Passarelli, Luke Smith, and Darren Gregg, the Chicago-based band, just played Metro last week, I guess it was, right? We just missed you. How was that? How was that show?
That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Good bands that night. Before that was Double Door. We had a good couple of shows recently.
So, you got any shows coming up?
I don't know that we do.
We're in the booking process.
That's good. We're focus on the
recording process.
I was going to say, focus on the monthly song.
There you go, exactly.
Then you can work that. That'll all come out of that. All right, let's squeeze one more in. Can we do it? I think we could do it. Let's not do a 15-minute opus here. I'm breaking hearts. But if you guys got a song, what are we going to hear here?
This next song is called The Woman Who Got Old. This features Dan Passarelli on vocals.
All right.
This one is, it was released just before the new album as a single-ish.
Sort of a prelude.
There we go. All right. The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club live in studio here on WGN.
Her and there was me and just space in between. She had the look, she had the smile, gold hair, red lips and style, sublime by design. She walked across a crowded floor, I think she wanted something more like everything. She'd smile, she'd laugh, she could make you cry, she was elegant and somewhat wild. Kept keeping up and keeping on, it's all the same. '20 years felt like a day, how she changed a touch of gray in her.
The Bishop's Daredevil Stunt Club, live in studio here on WGN Radio. You can check out all their stuff at bishopband.com. You guys, thanks so much for coming in and playing live tonight. We appreciate it, man. You guys sounded great. All right, that's going to do it for us tonight here on The Download. Thanks to Bob Ferguson. Great music, live music in studio. That's great. So wonderful. Great show. Tomorrow night, Super Tuesday, election results. We'll be here with a full-on political show that includes in-studio Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. and many, many others who will be calling in and joining the analysis of the election results from Super Tuesday.
I have a feeling we're going to be saying Trump and Clinton a lot. That's right. Just my prediction.